Welcome back to Radio Entrepreneurs. I'm Jonathan Friedman, and our next guest in the studio is Ian So. Ian is with Chicken and Rice Guys. I assume you're a chicken and rice guy.
I'm the chicken and rice guy, one of them.
So tell us about the initiation of the concept and how you guys were you sitting around one night and said, you know, I could really go for some chicken and rice or, you know, looking for a staple. Tell us about the founding of the company.
Yeah, that's kind of exactly what happened. I actually went to Babson College just down the street from here. And so I got the entrepreneurship bug in college. And we literally, after college, I was like, I don't really like working at a desk job 40 hours a week. A lot of it is like, I didn't feel like I had ownership of what I did. I didn't feel like whatever I put in, I'd be compensated fairly. So I was thinking, okay, maybe I should start a business. That's what I went to school for. And so our friends and I, we literally put a Word document together and started putting business ideas in there. And one of those ideas, I think we had 17 ideas before we got to it, was this idea of chicken and rice. And what started it was when we went to New York. It was a weekend. We were drinking. And then there was a cart, a famous cart that's open till like 4 a.m., and they had street food there called chicken and rice. It's a Middle Eastern street food. And we tried it and we loved it. And that's where we're like, that was when we were brainstorming. We're like, we should bring this to Boston because they don't have anything like that. Mm-hmm. There's no street food in Boston. We have sausages.
Right.
We have hot dogs. And so we thought this could be a hit.
And coming out of your cart probably doesn't put peppers and onions on the street.
No.
Which seems to be a common ad. So literally it was born out of a weekend in New York, an opportunity, and you guys saw it and seized it. So tell us about the next phase. You started as a mobile unit, or you started in a retail store?
Actually started off as just a regular food cart,
okay,
which we found on eBay, and it was in New York, and I actually had to install a towing hitch onto my car to go pick it up. Then when we brought up to Boston, we realized there's no spots available anymore for food carts. They're all grandfathered in.
Mm.
So when we called, I think it was the YMCA or whatever that moderates some of those public spots. We were like, can we get onto the spots? They're like, there's a 10-year wait list for a new spot. So in many ways, we got really lucky because back then, the Boston Food Truck Program just started. I think they were 1 year old.
Okay.
So we saw on their website there's a pretty structured program on how to do everything. And so we filled out all the paperwork, and we realized that we could actually do it. We just needed to go buy a food truck and sell the cart we had.
So did you guys tell us about the evolution of the menu? Because obviously in the food business, menu is all important. And, you know, there's a lot of things that go on as well. But if you don't have good food, nobody's going to come back, right?
Yeah.
So was that something that you guys worked for an extensive period of time to develop a menu? Was it, you know, late night binging and, you know, saying, okay, we got to cook, you know, guys coming out of college, you probably, you know, mac and cheese is probably more common than, you know, chicken and rice. But tell us about the evolution of that.
Yeah. So, when we tried the food, the first thing I did is I had my mom try it because she's a great cook. And she's like, oh, you know what? This isn't that hard to make. I think, you know, and she kind of figured out the initial recipe.
So she deconstructed what was going on and she became the test chef.
A little bit the first time. And then we took that and we ran with it because she still was living in New York and we were living in Boston at the time. So what we would do is we would get the food, try it, bring it back to Boston. Literally just try each piece of the dish, like the chicken, the rice, the lettuce, and try to replicate what the New York version was.
Mm-hmm.
And we probably did like 60 different food tests with all sorts of weird combinations in the sauces.
And has that been a continual evolution? You know, I guess, or have you guys really stuck to your knitting? And obviously, as the name, you know, plays your chicken and rice. I mean, that's the foundation.
Yeah, the staples have stayed the same, but we've always tried to improve each ingredient. So like the chicken, we changed the process. We used to boil the chicken and then season it. Now we bake the chicken and season it, and part of those seasonings change over time. And I think we learned that watching the Food Network. There's Chef Appleman, he works for Chipotle. I was like, why do they need a fine dining chef? But apparently they also evolve their food as well. So we try to evolve our food to be a little bit more ethnic. I think we started off with pretty basic flavors. But I think Americans, their palates are becoming more sophisticated, mm-hmm. and I think they can handle more of an ethnic flavor, which is what we're trying to go for.
So did anybody on your team, initial team, have any food experience or food service experience?
None of us were so chefs. Yeah.
Pretty bold. So, and you know, you're in an industry that is fairly regulated as far as health and safety standards are concerned.
Yeah.
So how do you guys come up to speed and make sure that you were able to check those boxes? Because...
Well, in the beginning, it was tough. Not only were none of us chefs, we never worked in a restaurant before. So we actually got really lucky in the beginning. We had a shared kitchen, and there was just a chef that shared the kitchen doing another catering, and he helped us even just make rice in the very beginning. I think the very first day, our rice cookers, we didn't even turn them on correctly. They're on keep warm.
Real newbies, really starting from scratch. You're serving rice. Hard rice.
Exactly, yeah. Hard rice and guys. Yeah, chicken rice, yeah. So...
good thing you didn't become hard rice and boiled chicken guy.
No, we wouldn't be here today.
so really a fabulous entrepreneurial story, because you literally had a concept and an idea, and you guys ran with it and, made a lot of mistakes, I'm sure, along the way and refined and kept refining. Yeah. And so what are some of the lessons looking back 6 years ago that, big mistakes that you may have made that you look mm-hmm. back and say, I can't believe we made those mistakes and, we could have cost us the business at the time.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot, but I think the most important lesson I've learned as an entrepreneur is as your business grows, you have to grow as a person and as a leader. And the skill set is so different in the beginning than what it is now. When we first started, it was all about our ability to do things and work 100-hour weeks and be able to clean and cook and do all that in one day. Now it's less so about my ability to do, but able to do things well and thoroughly. I almost had to change as a person because our business has doubled every year. We went from, I think our first year was maybe $100,000 in revenue, and now we're up to $4 to $5 million a year. Mm-hmm. So the type of leader it takes to run that kind of business is just completely different.
And obviously, with that growth in revenue has come commensurate, I assume, growth in staff as well. Mm-hmm. And so, you went from a small group of predominantly owners the founding team, and I don't know how many are on that team, but and then evolved to, now you must have a lot of employees in the number of locations that you have.
Yeah. There were three partners to start, and we did everything. I went out and sold the food. My other partner handled the money, and the third partner cleaned the trucks and cooked the food. So it worked out really nicely. And now we have, right now we have 55 employees. And seasonally, it gets up to probably 75 to 100 in the summer and the spring.
So you increase pretty dramatically in the spring and summer. There is some seasonality to it.
Yeah, we see a 50% increase on the trucks.
Wow, side. Is that just a function of people just don't want to walk the streets in the winter? Or they're not even good. They don't leave their offices.
People just love to be outside in the summer. Yeah. So.
And what's just for context? What is a busy day on a food truck? How many meals do you serve?
So I think the most we've served in a day is probably 600 to 700 covers. Wow.
And that's in a 3-hour window or so?
Yeah,
or?
Probably wow. 11 to 2. That's at Dewey Square in Boston.
Wow. And now those locations are permitted and it's sort of like the Southie thing. You establish your spot and rain or shine, it's yours. Is that
yeah,
the way
yeah.
it
no,
works?
No, no, there's
or?
No like you leave a lawn chair and that's your spot. No, everything's permitted through the city of Boston for most locations, but each town kind of has their own rules. Mm-hmm. But Boston's pretty regulated. Cambridge is pretty regulated. Some towns you can just pull up anywhere, but most of them you have to go through the health department and get permitted, and you have to tell them where you are and you can only be there.
And as you've evolved, and now you said you have three trucks on the road?
We have four.
Four trucks on the road. Have you evolved in terms of, the first time we cooked in them, it felt great, but, a year down the road, we established these trucks aren't built out right. It doesn't work for our flow or things. Have you started to customize and create trucks that are more to in fitting with your business?
Yeah, absolutely. We have a total of four trucks. And they're all completely different. One's gas, one's diesel.
Oh, wow. So they're not even standardized, but I guess that's part of it.
Yeah.
And could you see at some point moving towards a standardized vehicle? I mean, obviously, as time and finance allows.
Yeah, definitely. We're going to have like a gas version and a diesel version. One truck is all electric, so we're gonna have an all electric version because you can't go through the tunnels with propane. So that's one big difference. And then we're gonna lay it out all the same.
So where do you guys see the growth coming? Will it be more on in the food truck end of the business or the brick and mortar?
Yeah, I think it's going to be on the food truck side. Just the capital investment is a lot lower. And then I don't think it's a fad because I think when we are able to drive out into places like office parks, we're delivering tangible value. We're able to bring food that they can't have. That's better. And sometimes they don't even have food options in those office parks. So I don't see that going away. And I think that's what we'll be doubled down on in the future.
So you guys see becoming almost more localized, you know, hitting the burbs, so to speak, or hitting various population centers that have that built-in population base and bringing it to them.
Yeah, probably half our business is in the suburbs now. And to the food truck point, we just opened our own warehouse. It's a 10,000 square foot warehouse that can fit up to 8 trucks. So we're going to be adding food trucks on that end.
Oh, excellent. And how much of what goes on happens centrally versus, you know, is the prep all centralized and then the actual cooking's done on location? Or is it, not to spill the secret sauce, but I imagine that there, as you scale, you need to have some central process. So
the restaurants are all, everything's done in-house. And then the food trucks, everything's done in-house in the warehouse. And then the food is loaded onto the trucks, and then the trucks go out to the different locations.
So you do have your secret sauce associated with the process and making it happen. So
yeah, we make everything. Yeah.
So is there any thoughts in terms of branching out from the menu perspective, or are you gonna you're known as and will always be the chicken and rice guys? Or
Well, we are definitely exploring different menu items. We have a store in Medford that's has about 30 seats, and it's kind of a more relaxed hangout spot. And we're going to test out some menu items like steak and rice and buffalo chicken and rice. And
But rice is the common variable. Now, in terms of allergies or I mean, I know people, you know, some people love chicken, some people won't touch it. Do you offer vegetarian or, with...
Yeah, we
different proteins, or
we have lamb, chicken, lamb hero, and tofu.
Oh, great!
Yeah, the tofu one's my favorite, actually.
Oh wow! So it is pretty broad in terms of options.
And
excellent, excellent. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, if people want to check you guys out, what's the best way for them to find you? You want to tell us where the locations of your trucks are at any given day, or your
we're all over. The best way is to go on our website, cnrguys.com. And we have a schedule there, and you can find out our restaurant locations and our truck locations. We also do catering too, so we can bring the food to you.
Oh wow! And would that be the trucks as well? Do you do parties with the truck?
We do parties. Yeah, we've done some weddings.
Wow! That's
people love it. Yeah.
That's cool. That's really cool. Great stuff. Our guest has been Ian So of Chicken and Rice Guys. It's a real pleasure to have you on Radio Entrepreneurs, and we look forward to the next stories of growth. And wish you guys continued success.
Thank you very much.
And we'll be right back with another segment on Radio Entrepreneurs.